This is Digital Story Podcast number 731, March 24th, 2020. Today's theme is How to Disinfect Your Gear. I'm Derek Story. Whether it's our smartphone or an interchangeable lens camera, our tech gear qualifies as some of our most personal possessions. We hold them in our hands, bring them to our face, and show them to other people. It only makes sense that we keep these items as clean as possible. This week, I'll talk about good habits for healthy photography, both with our gear and our immediate surroundings. I hope you enjoy the show. So one of the first rules when we were working in LA during our street photography workshop was that you could not hand your camera to another person. There was no sharing of gear, smartphones, nothing. It was verboten. That's just the way that had to be. And why is that? Well, because what we've learned is that germs can stay on surfaces for 24 to 72 hours. And we don't want to be practicing all the other good things, social distancing and so forth, and then just fall short by handing our camera to someone else, having them put their hands all over it, us taking it back and then putting it up to our face. We just want to avoid that whole thing. Now, in general, I think it pays dividends, and that's not just right now, but all the time, to keep our stuff clean. Now, I don't mean become a germaphobe. I just mean practice good, healthy habits. But a lot of times we don't really know how to do that, or there isn't a lot of information, or we haven't had time to look up information on keeping things like our lenses, our smartphones, our immediate surroundings clean and healthy. So I thought I'd talk about that a bit today. I've been doing some research on it. I have a couple articles that I really love. I'm going to talk about them, and then I have links to them in the show notes so that you can go and refer to them as needed. And I think the first thing that I want to talk about, and this was something that was totally new to me until I started doing a little bit of research, something called dwell time, D-W-E-L-L, dwell time. And this is from an article called Dwell Times, What Are They and Why Do They Matter? And it's from a site called pathosans.com, P-A-T-H-O-S-A-N-S.com. I have the link to the specific article on their site in the show notes. So first, what is dwell time? Okay. And why am I bringing this up? The Environmental Protection Agency defines dwell time as, quote, the amount of time that a sanitizer or disinfectant must be in contact with the surface and remain wet in order to achieve the product's advertised kill rate. Different disinfectants target a wide array of different pathogens. The surfaces these pathogens inhabit also vary greatly. For best results, professional cleaners know that they must target pathogens and the corresponding dwell times. Some products may have a dwell time of only seconds, while others may require up to 10 minutes or more before they achieve the desired control. This was news to me, and I don't know why. Maybe I just don't read the labels enough on these things. But my thinking was that I could take like a Lysol wipe, and I could go around and just wipe all the doorknobs, the light switches and everything just once, cover it, right? Get it wet and all that, and then move on to the next. And that I would achieve that 99.9% kill rate that's advertised on the front label. But actually, the way that it works, in order to reach that 99.9% kill rate, you have to turn around the product, read the back label, and find out how long it has to stay wet on the surface to reach its maximum potential. So some things can happen very quickly. Some things can take longer, up to 10 minutes. And you need to find out how long the dwell time is for the particular product that you're using if you want to maximize its efficiency. And that, when I started looking at that, I was going, oh, wow. So it's not just automatically 99.9 when you just, you know, just do a quick wipe on something. You actually may have to wipe it down. And then if the dwell time, for example, is 5 minutes, and then if it starts to dry while it's still wet, wipe it again, keeping it wet. And that's the key to this. You have to keep it wet with whatever disinfectant you're using for the entire dwell time in order to reach, you know, its potential. At first, I thought this was disheartening because I may not have been disinfecting as well as I thought originally. But now I like it because now I have confidence in how to use these products. And I have now researched all the stuff that I have and that I use. I know how long the surface has to stay wet, and I'm following those directions. So I think that is pretty cool. Now, the site is really designed for people who are professional cleaners, and they have another tip here that I want to share with you because I thought it was really good. Here's what they say. For maximum effectiveness, we recommend using the two-step cleaning process to help prevent the spread of disease-causing pathogens. Step one, clean and remove unwanted soils from surfaces using a cleaning solution with a microfiber. This will help remove potential microbial harboring areas. Step two, apply a disinfecting solution to the surfaces while adhering to the manufacturer recommendations for dilution, safety, and dwell time. See, now dwell time is just part of the vocabulary, right? Finally, after waiting for the recommended dwell time, remove the solution with a wet, dry vacuum or microfiber. So that, okay, again, I'm going, wow, you know, there's more to it, just like everything else, right? There's more to it than I actually realized. But then once you find out, you go, oh, okay, this is kind of cool. This is how the pros do it, right? Now, one thing that I want to emphasize for everything that we talk about today, or that I talk about today, is that just as important as dwell time and all that other stuff is what it says about being safe using the product. You have to read that as well. You want to use whatever product it is safely, because it doesn't do any good to disinfect a surface if you make yourself sick. Okay, and I actually personally know of people who, you know, didn't ventilate a bathroom properly, were using these strong chemicals and actually got sick while they were cleaning their bathroom. And, you know, that can be dangerous. So make sure that you follow the safety directions as well as the dwell time. All of this is important. Suddenly, those back labels are what I consider required reading, okay? And those of us that don't like to read instructions, we just like to dive in, this is the exception. Read the instructions, alrighty? So that is dwell time. I loved learning about that, and hopefully you'll find it useful as well. The next thing I want to talk about is an article that I thought was really good as well. And it's how to disinfect camera equipment and spaces. And this was on lensrentals.com. It's their blog. This is a terrific blog anyway. I just think they knock it out of the park over and over again. But this particular article is fantastic. And so I'm going to talk about a lot of things in the article. But again, I have the link to it in the show notes. I highly recommend that you go over to the site, click on that link, go over to the site, read the article in its entirety, because Roger covers a lot of things that I won't have time to discuss today. And a lot of those things, you know, are good to know. Plus, I want to make sure that Roger gets credit for all this hard work that he did and that he gets those clicks, those well-deserved clicks from us. So in this case, more than ever, please go to the show notes, click on the article, go over to lensrentals.com. They're great people. And read that article for yourself, because he's done a heck of a job. Now, I'm going to read to you the first part of the article here. So this is Roger talking, but it really sets up the article well. And quite frankly, I don't want to mess it up, okay? I'm qualified to talk about this subject to some degree. I take care of a ton of camera equipment, and I was a physician in my past life. And I've had so many requests or information about this that it seems logical to put something out so everyone has access to it. That being said, at this moment in time, there are no right answers. This is my best knowledge and best opinions. Other people have other thoughts. 2 weeks from now, new information may make some of this incorrect or show that there are better ways to do things. If I say something today, and the CDC says something else next Thursday, go with the CDC. And, you know, that's Roger's words right there, but that's also my words for this podcast too, okay? Finally, we're talking about using products that can have some side effects and cause problems. What I'm going to discuss is relatively safe, but if you use these suggestions, be smart, test a small amount on yourself and your gear, and make sure it doesn't cause any problems for you. All right, so basically what he's doing is he's qualifying himself, and he's also, putting forth the disclaimers, which I think is very smart. They're very logical, and I'm glad that he said them as clearly as he did. Now, he goes over a bunch of disinfectants here, and I thought this was interesting, so I'm going to touch on these as well. Again, there's more information in the article, but these were fascinating to me because I learned a lot from reading this. First disinfectant that he talks about is soap and water, and we hear soap and water over and over again these days, and for good reason. Used for 20 seconds is superbly effective on skin and other surfaces. Whatever soap is fine. It works by dissolving the lipid, fatty capsule, around the virus. All right, here's an aside. I did not know that. I always wondered how soap worked. And I did not learn it until I read this article. Soap works by dissolving the fatty capsule around the virus. Therefore, the virus is vulnerable. And here's an alternative for those of you freaking out about, quote, I can't get Lysol wipes. Okay. Which, you know, no one can right now. Just use some soap and water. It's effective, if not quite as easy. So, yes. Oh, you know, this was like, we could almost stop right here, but we're not going to. Soap and water, which I think we all have that in supply right now. We don't need Lysol wipes. We don't need a lot of the other stuff. Yes, they're convenient. But again, remember, we have to read the back of them now because we know about dwell time to make sure we're using them properly. Soap and water, it's very straightforward. 20 seconds, get between your fingers, get underneath your nails, do the palms of your hands, do the back of your hands. Soap is a beautiful thing. It really is, okay? So soap and water, top of the list and for good reason. All right, second thing he talked about, isopropyl alcohol. At concentrations of 60% or higher, this is very effective, although it works a bit better on surfaces than on skin. I wouldn't use rubbing alcohol out of a bottle on my skin, but we do use rubbing alcohol on our skin in the forms of Purell and other hand sanitizers. That's basically one of their main ingredients. So Purell is 60% isopropyl alcohol. It may not work as fast as soap, and the rule of thumb is just to let it dry rather than wiping it off. And again, that is a good rule of thumb. So if you're using a hand sanitizer or alcohol, you know, with a wipe, let it dry. Don't wipe it down. So just let it dry, let it air dry. It won't take that long anyway. And that is the most effective way to use it. Chlorine bleach. He talks about this. Standard laundry bleach is usually 2.6% to 5.25% sodium hychlorite, which is way too high a concentration to use for disinfecting. So in other words, and you might want to go to the site just to make sure you get these numbers right. You don't use it straight, you dilute it. A lot of the spray bleach things that we can get in the store are, you know, diluted to these concentrations. A couple of important notes here that he adds. Never mix chlorine bleach with any other cleaner or put it in a bottle that used to have another cleaner without thoroughly rinsing the bottle. Underline that, okay? Now, I know you know this, but we need to cover all of it, right? Do not mix chlorine bleach with any other cleanser, period. And be very careful about that, you know, because some cleanser could be a residue in the bottle or something like that, and you pour it in, and next thing you know, you got a science experiment that is not good for you, okay? And mix it in a well-ventilated area just in case. Bleach plus ammonia, vinegar, and several other things can cause hazardous fumes, okay? Chlorine bleach is very effective. Hospitals use it, but it can be irritating in large quantities, and it can fade dyes and color. All right, now he emphasizes that about five times. Now we know that because, well, that's how we use chlorine bleach, right? Like on our white socks and all that kind of stuff. It fades dyes and color. So if you're using it in the studio, in your workplace, anywhere near your clothes, just be very careful because it will fade dyes and color, okay? And if you do spray down an entire room, for example, if you have to do something like that, please keep people out of the room until those fumes clear. Even when I just do a light amount of a spray bleach in the bathroom, for example, I have one bathroom downstairs at the studio. That's the public bathroom. You know, that's where clients and visitors, that's the bathroom they use. So I usually wipe it down with a spray chlorine bleach solution at the end of the day if I've had a lot of visitors. That'll make me, I have to tell you, I have to open up the window in that bathroom and I have to be very careful because just a little bit of that will make me a little bit woozy. If I'm feeling woozy, I know that's not good for me, okay? Just be very careful with chlorine bleach. Read the instructions. Make sure that you get your dilutions right if you're going to use it. Now, here's another cool thing. And these are quaternary ammonia products. And there's a cool tip in here, too, that I'm going to give you in a second. There are tons of these. They have slightly different chemical configurations. They are both detergents like soap and disinfectants. So they're very common in disinfecting wipes and such. And I think the wipes, the Lysol wipes that I have, fall into this category. And he says that they're also what's in most fabric softeners. Now, he hasn't seen any actual studies about their effectiveness against COVID-19, but they are effective against other coronavirus and expected to be effective against this one as well. Now, here's a cool tip with these. Dryer antistatic sheets usually contain lots of this compound. He says that his significant other is an ICU nurse, and she carries a few of these dryer antistatic sheets in her purse as door grabbers and emergency cleaning wipes. Isn't that cool? I just thought that was, again, I have heard of some neat uses for dryer antistatic sheets. One of them is as an insect repellent. You put them underneath the tablecloth at picnics, things like that. This one I did not know of. And when I read, you know, when you get one or two gems like this in an article, really makes me happy. It really does make me happy. I thought that was a gem. So if you're at the store and you can't get, let's say, your Lysol wipes or whatever you're looking for, see if they have any dryer antistatic sheets. Be good to grab a box of those because they can be helpful as well. Again, use them. Like for instance, when you go to the gas station, use them to wrap around the pump handle. So they are between your hand and the pump handle. Pump your gas, throw that one away, and then when you're done, pull another one out of your pocket and just wipe your hands with it. That kind of stuff will really help. Those are kind of the basic compounds that we have to work with. There are more, and there are more in the article, and you should go look at them. Here's what he says about cleaning your gear. He said, first, remember that if your gear has been sitting away from people for a couple of days, it's safe. If you're on a video production or a multi-camera shoot, don't share cameras. That also applies if you're at a workshop, right? Don't share cameras. Assign who uses what equipment as much as possible. If a camera, if any equipment has been away from people sitting on a shelf for 48 hours, chances are very good there's nothing on it. 72 hours, there is nothing on it, okay? It just doesn't last that long, Alrighty. So it's safe. You don't have to wipe it down then. And in fact, you know, that is one of the techniques, is take your gear, set it on a shelf, and, you know, don't touch it. Don't let anyone else touch it for a couple days. That is one great way to get the bugs off it. Okay. Now, he talks about alcohol and soap. Despite what some manufacturers have said, we and every repair shop I know have used isopropyl alcohol in 60% or greater concentrations on camera equipment for a long time and haven't seen any adverse effects. Some manufacturers said 99% isopropyl might maybe affect lens coatings. I respectfully disagree, although I will say that vigorous rubbing can affect some lens coatings, so take it easy and don't use wire brushes and such. Something I like about Roger, he also has a sense of humor. Don't soak it. That is asking for trouble, and it isn't necessary. Just moisten it. Use common sense and try to keep your disinfectant on the outside and not let it run into the inside. I think that's probably what manufacturers are concerned about when they talk about, you know, using alcohol on camera equipment. Quite honestly, you know, they're just thinking that we're not smart enough to use it correctly, and sometimes they are correct, all right? They're right about that. So they don't want this stuff getting on the inside of the camera. It doesn't need to be on the inside of the camera. It should be only on the outside of the camera. So use moist towelettes, things like that. Wipe down the surfaces. Don't let it run on the inside, and you should be fine, right? So he's saying light mist with a spray bottle or cloth or paper towel dipped in alcohol works great for large surfaces. You may want to dip a Q-tip or similar thing to get into small areas or places where you'd rather not spray. Now, I do a lot of repair work on cameras for the film camera shop. I'm doing more these days, right? Because I'm, you know, sheltered in place here. And that's exactly what I do. I use Q-tips. I use alcohol. I use, I have a cloth, soft cloth. And then I also have, it's like an Armor All kind of compound, except it's really made for upholstery and things like that. And so I'll clean first with the alcohol, lightly clean. Q-tips are great for getting in those areas without putting too much alcohol down into the crevices. I'll do all that sort of stuff. And then I'll wipe it all down, make sure it's all clean. And then for the, you know, the leather surfaces and the rubber surfaces, I have this really cool stuff. It was originally made for car interiors. It's sort of like Armor All, although it's a little different. And then I use that to finish it off and protect, you know, those different areas, the rubber areas, the leatherette areas, all that kind of stuff. And it works fantastic. I have never had a problem. I have film cameras that I'm using right now that I worked on a couple years ago, and they look great and they feel great and they perform great. Okay. There is a chance that alcohol used repeatedly could dull the rubber of a lens ring or camera bodies. He says, I haven't seen it, but I have seen it claimed. I've also heard that it can dull or fog the finish of LCD screens, but again, I haven't seen it. And I do know that the monitor cleaner I use contains isopropyl alcohol. Still, given that others claim it can, at least in some cameras, I try to keep it to a minimum. Okay. Words of wisdom there. And then he wraps up, and I'm wrapping up this topic right now too, with a final note about cameras. And I'm just going to read you directly what he says here, because I think he puts it well. And I think this is a good way to go down the home stretch here. A final note about cameras. This is from Roger on lensrentals.com. I think it's pretty easy and pretty safe to disinfect all of your equipment and studio space or office effectively, except, and you put except in uppercase letters, for your camera. Let's face it, you or them got your face all up in there. So it's the most likely place to have received a big viral load. It's also the place you don't want to soak and saturate with any of the above solutions. You don't. Again, uppercase, you do not want to soak and saturate your camera with these above solutions. Plus, the areas around the LCD, viewfinder, etc. are full of nooks and crannies, making them more difficult to get to. And according to some manufacturers, LCD screens might be sensitive to disinfectants. Again, my own opinion is I haven't seen it, but what manufacturers say just can't be ignored. So here's what he recommends. I recommend just not sharing cameras on a shoot right now. That is exactly the approach that we took in LA. If you do share, disinfect it carefully with a minimal solution and set it aside for 24 hours, 48 hours if you are paranoid. Virus particles don't make spores and they're not going to last on a surface for a long time. I personally am comfortable that 24 hours is long enough, but there is some evidence that it takes 72 hours to be absolutely safe. Thank you, Roger, for writing this up and making it public. I think it's a really cool piece. Again, the link to it is in the show notes. It'll take you over to his site. And by the way, it is the site also to rent things, right, at lensrentals.com. So I hope you found this information useful. Use common sense. Don't get stuff on the inside of your camera or your other electronics. Take care of yourself. Be safe. Follow the directions. But you know what? Also, try to keep things as clean as possible. I want to talk a little bit about Portfolio Box 4, which is a new version that is out. If you're a Portfolio Box user, you have it, right? You just have to log in because, you know, it's a web service, right? It's online. They updated it for you. And I mentioned last week when I talked about Portfolio Box 4, and by the way, I also want to mention at the top of this bit here that TDS listeners can get a free upgrade to Portfolio Box 4 Pro, and I have an offer code for you, and I'll just give that to you in just a minute for free for a whole year, right? It's really terrific. That is a super value. The thing I wanted to talk about is the thing that I was excited about when I first found out about the upgrade is the client proofing gallery. And I gave this a spin this week, and oh God, I'm so happy about this. So what they say is it allows you to share dedicated and protected photo galleries with your clients. Your client can log in, check the gallery, comment, and share their favorites with you. This makes it easy to share and proof directly from your website. You also have the possibility to automatically add a watermark to your photos. So I played around with this. I created a gallery. You know, you have options. So first of all, it's easy to password protect it. You're just checking a box when you're setting up this page. So you create a new page. You know, you put all your stuff on it. Then you click a box in the settings there to say password, protect this page. And then it asks you for the password. Put that in, and that's all you have to do. It's ready to go. Obviously, do not forget the password because that's very awkward. You have other options, though, and you want to think about these. Like when I was doing the test for the page I wanted to do, I didn't have it show up in the menu or in the navigation or anywhere else. In other words, so this page is not visible to the public. You would have to have the URL for it, and you would have to enter that URL into the browser to even get to the page. Now, once you get to that page, then it's going to ask you for the password and it won't let you in. And when it asks you for the password, it doesn't show you any of the page in the background. So you basically just get a white screen and it says, enter your password, buddy. If you don't enter the password, you don't see anything. Nicely done, right? Enter the password, then it will open that page and you or your client or whomever can take a look at what's going on there, and you know, it behaves normally from there. So this is a really terrific feature. A lot of my clients will not let me show the photos that I do for the shoot, publish them openly online or any of that kind of stuff. They consider them proprietary, and they usually, at least until the project's done, but a lot of times they never let me show them or share them. So I've been using a different service to do this, but now that I have it on my Portfolio Box account, I'm pretty darn excited about this, and I think I'm going to be using it a lot. It's just part of what you get with this upgrade. They did the upgrade you just enjoy the benefits. In the show notes, I have listed a lot of the other benefits, like previewing your site before publishing it, you know, the e-commerce improvements, all of that. So you can go take a look at it. You're going to want to go over to the show notes anyway, because if you don't have a pro account already, you can get a free year by going to portfoliobox.net, PORTFOLIOBOX.net. Set up a new site. Use this offer code to upgrade it to pro. You ready? Again, you'll probably want to go to show notes, but I'll give it to you anyway. 15SAMDPTBL81M5. Okay. Or go to the show notes, all right? And then you get 100% discount for the first year, and you can really enjoy all the benefits of Portfolio Box Pro. And now I can do client review galleries there as well. A big thanks to Portfolio Box for co-sponsoring this show. Next week, I'll talk about some other goodies as well. Where I have a little virtual camera club news. I'm going to start out with our Patreon members, our Inner Circle members, and thank them for their support. You know, it's interesting. We have access, as you know, as people that are members of Patreon, to, you know, tips and tricks, and you know how to cope with changing times and all that. And a lot of folks have been losing members right now, have been losing their patrons. A lot of artists have, because times are getting tough. People are nervous, all of that. I want to say that our Inner Circle members have been hanging tight through these tough times. And I just want to acknowledge that, because I know that we're all concerned right now about how we spend our money. You know, we have limited assets and we have to choose carefully. And I just want to thank our Inner Circle members for choosing to support this community. We have only lost, since all of this started, we've only lost one person. Everyone out there, hats off to our Inner Circle members. Thank you for supporting the show. Right now, when it's shelter in place, I'm not out working, and I want to keep this podcast going. These are the people that are helping me do that. I want to mention that we have tiles for B&H and Amazon, all the pages of the digital story. If you click on those tiles first before you do your shopping, then find what you're looking for. That helps support the site. Those are affiliate tiles. Links in articles are affiliate links. They have our code embedded in them. Doesn't cost you anything more, but it really does help support us. Thank you, folks, those of you who take that extra step and come to the digital story first and then go to Amazon or B&H. Again, these things add up, especially right now. And finally, a huge thanks to our friends at Red River Paper. They are right now aware of the situation that many photographers are in. Instead of out working, they're inside. And they're trying to do extra things to help photographers stay creative, learn new stuff, all of that good stuff. I would click on the tile that's on all the pages of the digital story, their Red River tile. Go over to their site, see what's going on. There's probably some great creative stuff there. Maybe this is the time you start playing with printing, right? This could be an excellent opportunity to create some fine art prints. You know, when you're out there working and you got hustle bustle going and all that stuff, you go, I just don't have time to print. Maybe you have time to print now. If you do, give it a try. I think you will find it very rewarding. They also have a great Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. Thank you so much for joining me. I hope you found a few tips in here that will help you, that are useful for you. I'm working on some great stuff for next week. Come back and join me then. Be safe, take care of yourself, and look out for others. Bye-bye now.